solar is not the answer for steel. And therefore, when we are talking of hydrogen as a technology, it's going to play a very important role, provided we are able to produce hydrogen at a competitive price.
Right.
And make it available to the industry.
Our focus right now is how we valorize, when we valorize it and try to utilize this captured CO2 into valuable products. So that is where, you know, the carbon capture utilization things comes in. And it is about, it will be a future currency for us. This 4,000 tons of CO2, which is actually going waste now, if it can be valorized, it can add a lot of money, millions of dollars to our bottom line immediately.
In Jindal Steel, sustainability is one of the values. It is in our blood, because sustainability for a hard-to-abate sector, it is core operations engineered. And hence, having a sustainability 101 curriculum, building capacity amongst line management so that they know how to internalize sustainability.
At the heart of India's growth story, whether you look at infrastructure, manufacturing, mobility, or energy, the country's ambitions are closely tied to the way steel is produced in India. Welcome to the Steel of India podcast. This is season 2, and in this episode, we call it Steel in Transition, the Low Carbon Path. We're going to address another thing that is critical to hard-to-abate sectors like this one. And that is, how does one cut carbon without compromising on the need, the burning need to build at scale? We're also, of course, going to address several other questions. You do see a panel over here that's ready and raring to go. But we're going to talk about what low-carbon transition really looks like inside of a plant. We must ask difficult questions, including the one which is, what is really realistic for a nation like India? And we'll also figure out what it really takes to go from intent to execution, because intent is where several organizations find themselves faltering or stuck. So that's going to be an important piece of information. But we don't really want this to be a podcast that leaves you with more questions than you started off with, right? We want to leave you with actionable insights, things that you can take and go back and apply in your specific context. And to that extent, I think a lot of the information you will find on this podcast today will be relevant no matter what sector you are part of. That is our endeavor. And to that end, we've decided to come at the subject from three different perspectives. One of those perspectives is going to be brought to us by Naveen Ahlawat. He is the President, Sustainability and Decarbonization at Jindal Steel. And we will look to him for insights on the operational view of things like efficiency, on the kind of energy choices that companies like Jindal Steel are making, for example, and also the trade-offs. Yes, that is a reality, the trade-offs that are made by plants on a near daily basis. Now, it's also important to get the larger view, right? So we need think tank category people. We need thought leaders to join us who've worked across sectors, who've worked in this field for a length of time. So we've decided to call Dr. Vibha Dhawan. She is Director General of the Energy and Resources Institute. And we're going to look to her for an understanding of what this credible low carbon pathway will look like for a growing economy like ours. So she'll help us with a science and policy-led perspective to that particular area, and hopefully a lot more than that. And because we also need to get down into the foxholes, figure out the brass tags, look at systems, data, and all of that, we've got with us Prateek Ghosh, who is Associate Vice President at Jindal Steel of Sustainability and Decarbonization. And he'll be telling us how all of this then helps make business decisions inside the organizations, how systems, data, and governance all feed into sustainability initiatives. So that's the panel we put together for you. Like I said, we mean business when we talk sustainability, and there are all kinds of meanings in that one sentence. Thank you so much to all of you for being part of the podcast.
Right.
Naveen, got to start with you, because like I said, right, we want this conversation to be about transition. We want to talk about progress in a way that it is grounded in reality, not esoteric stuff. And we want, of course, to see how steel can continue to support India's future in a way that is responsible. And yet, when you talk about low-carbon steel, right, the immediate imagery that it evokes is of futuristic tech. It's about labels and things like that. And very rarely do people talk about the everyday, day-to-day running of a plant. So that's where we're going to start. Inside the fence of Jindal Steel, what does low-carbon transition look like for the organization?
Okay, thanks for the question. See, for us, it is very clear when we talk about the transition inside our premises, where we think is about starting with the quick wins. When we talk about quick wins, it is about the low-hanging fruits, which are, you know, where the efforts are only 20%, but the output is 80%. That is where we start with. And one of the things where we start is basically efficiency. So efficiency is also the process efficiency. We call operation excellence around this. And then the energy efficiency, where we drive energy efficiency around the motors, the heavy motors, the compressors, and whole host of big rotating equipments, which consume a lot of energy, including our power that is, you know, going into to run our steel operations. So that is where we believe this is where the crux lies. And apart from this, the most known or underrated or the misnomer here is the waste, converting waste to wealth, waste to worth. And waste to value. And that is where, because so much of waste is coming from steel plants, slag is one of them. So we have blast furnace slag, we have electric arc slag coming out from electric arc furnaces and the basic oxygen furnaces. We have also the wastewater coming. And along with this, the ash is also one of the waste that we have to counter. So I think attacking on these, trying to understand that how we can find out a solution around basically these waste, converting this waste. So one of the example is like using this slag into basically blast furnace slag to make cement. So that we are already doing right now. Apart from this, the slag coming out from the electric arc furnaces or from the basic oxygen furnaces, using that slag to make roads. These, according to me, are the bucket where we believe if we can work around this area, this bucket,
right,
the incremental capex or the capital expenditure that is going to go around this bucket, it is hardly 10 to 15%. But the overall impact is close to 30 to 40%. Yeah. And that is where we believe it can be a quick win for us. And that is where we start with.
Yeah. You know, you've, I think, given us the substrate upon which to build this conversation, because it really, you breathe new meaning into the word walk the talk. We use it loosely everywhere. Every industry says we need to walk the talk. But these are some great examples. And from what I hear, this sort of a transition is really a function of what happens inside of the plant on a daily basis. And that in turn points to efficiency. And Jindal Steel obviously is treating efficiency as the first and possibly the most powerful decarbonization lever. Why is this approach considered the ideal one for you?
So why it is ideal? Because, you know, efficiency derives basically behavior, and, you know, behavior derives the performance. That is what we believe. So when you talk about efficiency, it is about the resource efficiency, the raw material that we consume, be it iron ore, be it coking coal, be it coal. So idea is how we can maximize the resource efficiency. When we say resource efficiency, the idea is how we can use our resources better, because most of our mines, our idea is always to work on a Toyota production model, you know, where all your inbound or the raw material, what we say, mines to metal, you know, it is so near that, you know, your logistics, which is part of your scope 3 emission, we try to reduce it. Right. So that is where we believe using the local available resources, which is actually the crux of India being the self-reliant or Atmanirbhar, that is where our focus lies, trying to use the local resources and how to use it, maximize the overall efficiency, trying to reduce the inbound logistics. So just to give an example in that, what we are doing right now in order to drive the efficiency. So we are, instead of bringing the iron ore via rakes or through the road, we are putting up a slurry pipeline from our mines to our plant. So this is 220 kilometer pipeline that we are building. Yeah. And this will be commissioned in basically within this financial year. And that is where, you know, it will cut off so many million tons of CO2 going otherwise into the air. Mm-hmm. So that is one of the example. Second example is basically bringing the coal from the mines directly to our plant. So instead of bringing it again by road or rake, we bring it through a pipe conveyor, which is, as we speak, it is being commissioned right now.
Okay.
So this is the second way of resource mix. Third is how we can try to increase the percentage, basically, iron into going into our blast furnaces or DRI plants. Mm-hmm. So what we do is, instead of using directly the lump iron ore or using sinter, we basically make it in pellets form.
Right.
So basically maximizing the pellet use into blast furnaces, and also the making DRI grade pellet within our same premises, it cut and improved a lot of efficiencies around the value chain. Mm-hmm. So that is where our focus is.
Right. Dr. Vibha, we really need to get your view, because efficiency means many things across sectors. And you've gotten some great examples from him on how that is being implemented or actioned as a lever for decarbonization in the Jindal Steel context. What else have you seen as best practices?
See, the point which Naveen listed about efficiency, and in Terry, we also have a division which works on industrial energy efficiency. And that is what it is, because what happens is, many a time, even if you want to make an investment and you say it's going to cost me, say, X million dollars or whatever, and then you say payback period is 3 years, 5 years, and that is on today's rate. But actually, it comes down. It's not even that. And what you are saving is GHG emissions. And today, when we are talking of decarbonization at the country level, we are talking of 2070. And then let's look into, can country actually be decarbonized if we follow the current practices? The answer is no. We really have to move towards decarbonization of hard-to-abate sectors, and steel is one of them. Let's also look at, like, when we talk at country level, we are talking 2/3 of the infrastructure is yet to be built. So look at the demand of steel, which is going to go up. Mm-hmm. Let's also look into exports, because we are one of the largest producers of steel in the world, and we export a lot of steel. And now with CBAM, it is that you'll have to actually pay for it if your steel is not green. Mm-hmm. Now, that is one thing which we are talking at macro level. What happens? We are talking at country meeting the emissions, or we are able to sell our produce and so on. More than that, it is every citizen has to be responsible and sensitive towards what I'm consuming, how green it is. Right. Because, and those of us who reside in Delhi, we know that come November, and we start talking about, is Delhi a livable city because of air pollution? Right. We have also read in the newspaper now that Delhi is not the only city. It is not only during winter. It's all through the year. And there are so many cities again coming in that category very soon. It's increasing at the country level.
Right.
And therefore, whether we like it or not, we will have to follow green practices. The two other things which I would like to make, it is attitudinal thing that green is expensive. It's actually not expensive. And another point which Naveen made, and that low-hanging fruits, that is in terms of energy efficiency and all, that has been already done. And most companies are following that. Now, what we require is a solution. And when we say hard-to-abate sectors, we really have to look into new technologies. Solar is not the answer for steel. And therefore, when we are talking of hydrogen as a technology, it's going to play a very important role, provided we are able to produce hydrogen at a competitive price.
Right.
And make it available to the industry.
Right.
So that is what the research part of it is going to be.
But speaking of these newer inputs and newer loops that we are looking at, renewables, hydrogen, circularity, how are these being integrated at Jindal Steel?
No, absolutely. As Dr. Vibha rightly said, see, it is not about, it's not one basically size fits all.
Right.
You have to basically map your short term to medium to long term. So when you talk about quick win, these are the immediate things that we are actually implementing on the ground. But it is not about that, you know, we implement this solution on the ground. We have to sort of close our eyes for these future-ready, technologies. So when we talk about circularity, you see, one of the things where we are working right now is the example, the road example that I told you about using the slag part of it. Second, the second thing is that we are probably one of the only, I think, steel maker in the world which is capturing more than 4,000 tons of CO2 per day. But idea is about through our coal gas, world's only coal gasification-based DRI plant. So the idea is how our focus right now is how we valorize and when we valorize it and try to utilize this captured CO2 into valuable products.
Right.
So that is where, you know, the carbon capture utilization things comes in. And it is about, it will be a future, you know, basically currency for us. This 4,000 tons of CO2, which is actually going waste now, if it can be valorized, it can add a lot of money, millions of dollars to our bottom line immediately.
Right.
So that is where we are doing a work with IID Bombay and Ministry of Steel to reduce this carbon dioxide into carbon monoxide and use this carbon monoxide back into our operations or putting it into our DRI plant.
Right.
So that is one. And also, we can use this carbon dioxide to make downstream ethanol.
Right.
So that is the first example that we have. Second is we are also trying to bring this cluster theory. It works so well because, you know, as Dr. Weber rightly said, you know, if we have to basically invest into future ready technologies, you require a lot of funding. And this funding can be, can be risk mitigated the moment when you do it crowdfunding, you know, when we have so many off-takers, when we have so many developers
right. Working
across, we have common pipelines, common off-takers. That is where, so we are bringing this concept of creating valleys or cluster within our plant where the captured CO2, instead of giving it to one off-taker, we can give it to multiple off-takers. And we ask them, please come in. We have land is not a constraint for us. We'll give you land, we'll give you utilities, and you can come in, put up your plant, and if required, we can also invest into that plant. So it forms a clear, source and sink, matching of source and sink. Mm-hmm. That is where we are also, exploring that, and we are going to sign multiple MOUs as we move forward and try to use this captured CO2. Then the next point is about the hydrogen part of it. Now, hydrogen is definitely the permanent answer for us because it will act as a reductant. But then the idea, as Dr. Weber rightly said, is how we can try to optimize the cost. That is where the issue is. But I think when we talk about the hydrogen use in iron and steel sector, I think we are probably the first one which can adopt at a mass scale for green hydrogen because of the simple fact, number one, we don't require hydrogen at a very high pressure or elevated pressure like the way for making ammonia,
right?
Second part is that you don't require basically the oxygen coming out from the hydrogen electrolyzers. That oxygen can be used in our operations. Mm-hmm. So that can be credited back to our overall levelized cost of hydrogen. So that is the second one. The third is that the hydrogen purity that we require in our operation, we don't require more than 99.5%. Mm-hmm. So you can also avoid that cost, purification cost, that eventually will add to your overall capex of electrolyzers. Yeah. So that way, I think we are basically in Angul, we are going to put up a 30 megawatt electrolyzer. And the first phase of 5 megawatt electrolyzer will be commissioned within the next 1 month.
Yeah.
So these are the things where we are busy. We believe that the efficiency, operational efficiency, energy efficiency, then going to carbon capture utilization, and then the hydrogen. This is the overall pathway for us.
So much to learn from one location and how it actually does all of it at scale in a process-led manner. You've given us plenty to, I think, take back and think over here. And Vibha, I must come to you over here because we've spoken plant and we've been inside of the Jindal Steel fence. So if I need to step out a little bit and unpack some of these common terms. What does a credible low-carbon pathway really look like for a growing economy like India? So we are now going a little macro here.
See, when we look at India, we are very unique. And uniqueness is that it's also a very price-sensitive market. And therefore, somewhere it is that we have to produce things in a sustainable way. There is a lot of emphasis on that we don't let anything go waste. In terms of efficiencies, we are good. We use local material as much as possible. Because challenges, we simply can't say that climate change will have negative impact on least in things. That is just, it's not going to take us anywhere. What we need to do is that climate change is going to happen. We also have to grow. And this growth can be sustainable. It can be green. Mm. It also requires change in the attitude.
Mm.
Because otherwise, saying that, what will we do?
Yeah.
That's not the answer. I have to find a solution. Yeah. And solutions are there.
And I'm so glad that Dr. Vibhadhavan has introduced this topic of sustainability and how we need to really hone our skill in the ability to sustain. Now, whenever people ask me what is sustainability and ESG for a steel company,
right,
I always say it is our operating system.
Hmm.
Because when the operating system is working, it is strong, our plants run safely, they run competitively.
I agree with you.
And once it is weak, everything crashes.
Hmm.
And at Jindal Steel, this operating system we call as RISE,
yeah.
R-I-S-E. Responsible governance, inclusive growth, sustainable environment, and ethical partnerships.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, RISE matters. And that's exactly what she was also mentioning. And Naveen has been talking about various initiatives that we have done under the environment element. Because RISE matters because it forces a 360-degree view.
Right.
It is not just E. It is not just compliance. Governance tells you who owns the decision. Inclusion tells you who is protected, who is benefited. Environment tells you how clean you are, how efficient you are.
Right.
And ethical partnerships, like we have with Terry, also tells us that whether our supply chain and stakeholders, they will trust you.
Hmm.
So yeah. Overall, I think that is the holistic approach that we at Jindal Steel are also, and for any business to look at our ability to sustain has to really make this walk the talk.
Right.
So, and just picking up from there, what we are basically looking at, because it is not what is the end product or what I have done in the last process, last leg of the process and say I'm green. It is the entire value chain,
absolutely,
right from the extraction of iron ore to the way it is transported, the way it is then made product, and even the final product, how it's going out of your factory.
Right.
And what is the problem with us, I'll say till now, with most of us, we really don't know what I'm doing. What is my own carbon footprint? And therefore, the word which you said, ethical, that is the most important one, because I have to be fair to myself. What am I doing? And the second part, which is gradually emerging in the society, as consumers also, we are becoming a little sensitive how responsible the company is.
Right.
What? And therefore, perhaps in years to come, if ESG is well documented and companies report with full sincerity, people, the recipients will be willing to pay, clients will be willing to pay a price if it is responsibly produced.
Yeah.
And that's what the change we want in the society as well.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah. You know, and, you know, taking her cue, and Naveen and I, we are at present working on a full-fledged project, because when somebody then asks that for us, what is sustainability in the steel company, in, you know, what are the, you know, five things that come to our mind? Mm-hmm. And some of it has been discussed. Intensity, air, circularity, and you have people. And I will also add supply chain, ethical supply chain that she was also mentioning about, and resilient sites, because she was talking about climate change.
Right.
And we have been talking about climate change mitigation, where we are focusing on transformational technologies that will prepare us for what's to come.
Right.
But there is another aspect that climate change has happened. How do we adapt? Yeah. How do we do vulnerability assessments of our physical assets? And that is what we as an organization are also doing. We are not putting ESG in a parallel universe. Mm-hmm. We are integrating it in our enterprise risk management.
Right.
And let me tell you, as she rightly said, and we all know, for example, right now you talked about Angul. We are working on a project in both Angul and in Raigarh about air, right? So for an integrated steel plant, air quality is not only compliance, but it is a community trust issue as well.
Sure, I agree.
And there, if we are not able to, ensure the air quality inside the premises are okay, what is not checked at the source comes to the gate. So that is why we have embarked on a big ticket project to completely look at how our air quality emissions in our operations have to be reduced.
Yeah.
And our top leadership, our promoters have actually told us that let us look at the strictest focus, that is the European standard.
Right.
And Naveen and I, we are working, we are all the time at the plant talking to the HODs because they are the real McCoys who are actually making things happen on the ground.
And that is exactly, it is about communication as well, in the stakeholders.
Right.
So stakeholders are the people who are working within our premises and also the external stakeholders.
Right.
When we say external stakeholders, the community, how they perceive us as a industrialist, what kind of responsibility that we are having for them, for their children. And that is where this project, basically we call it a PM 2.5 project. Right. It is absolutely aware. And this, the incremental capital expenditure that we are going to do basically to focus on this to reduce the PM 2.5, it is actually a nice to have for anybody else, but for us, it is actually a must to have.
Correct.
Where we want to clearly signal to the external stakeholders that look, our benchmark is not the Indian standards, but the strictest standards, so that suppose the dust that is coming out from the dust collection system, people should go and they can eat near to that point. So that is the focus that we are going to bring in. Yeah. And once we get our house in order, the focus is not just to get our house in order. The focus is also to motivate other stakeholders outside our premises. That is also super important. That makes the entire thing inclusiveness.
Yeah.
I'll just add to it because you very rightly said that you have to take care of the communities who are staying nearby, your own staff, because otherwise they'll fall sick.
Yeah. Yes.
You don't want that to happen. Yes.
She said it so rightly. And we also see that there are main three pillars around which our whole focus is. It is about responsible stewardship. That whatever product or service any business comes out with meets international standards. So that we can be a Viksit Bharat that she mentioned that our Prime Minister has spoken about. But at the same time, we got to understand that business is not operating in silos.
Right.
We have to have strategic stakeholder engagement. Because, I remember I heard it in a Terry conference, actually, that in the corporate parlance, there is TGIF. Thank God it's Friday, because we're all looking forward to the weekend. But we are living in an age of instant communication. So we have to be very, very sincere because it is the Twitter, Google, Instagram, Facebook generation who is constantly looking at how an organization is operating.
Mm.
It is about managing stakeholder expectations. Mm-hmm. And that is why we not only look at responsible stewardship with the actions on the ground that Naveen has spoken about, that we are doing it in Angul and Raigarh. Not only the fact that we are proactively communicating with stakeholders who are not only the regulators, but the consumers, but the employees, but the supply chain and community for sure. We are also looking at future-proofing. We are also moving from the quarter-to-quarter focus to a long-term focus.
Yeah.
So that we can anticipate what can hit us.
Sure.
And moving, being an early mover in the sustainability aspect is how the cookie should crumble.
Right.
That is how you bring a new generation organization that we want to be in the steel sector, as far as we are concerned.
Yeah. There is so much effort, clearly, from what Prateek and Naveen have outlined for us at the level of the plant, the broader vision, the strategic, the investments, and all of that. There is intent, for sure. There's no doubt about it. But in your experience from the vantage position that you occupy, Vibha, where have you seen industry get ahead of itself, get a little over-optimistic about things? What are the few red flags you want to caution them, or what are the guardrails you want to give them, saying, don't get too excited about this because wait and watch? A few.
I'll say they should take risk. I won't say that there are red flags. If they have capacity, I won't say every technology is going to succeed. It can also be that the cost of technology will come down and maybe we'll have better technology tomorrow. Yeah. And it may not be possible for them to replace the infrastructure that they have set up. But we want early movers. Unless and until there is proof of concept, we are never going to succeed.
Yeah.
So therefore, I'll actually encourage industries that move forward, take risk. If you can afford it, it's also part of research. Research to commercialization is actually going to come from them. The only thing which I'll also say is that they need to work very closely with academia. So I'll say the industry, because industry-academia interaction must be improved.
Absolutely.
Because they have to work in partnership. Industry has to tell where the shoe is pinching. And it should not be standalone kind of solutions that academia is providing to them. And early, like if you look at Indian academia, we have so many technology at TRL 2, 3. To take those, its technological readiness level. So we don't want to stop at TRL 2, 3. Rather, industry should come forward and say, okay, let's work together. It may succeed, it may not succeed. And I'll put it this way, even if your success rate is 10%, you have won the battle.
Hmm.
That's what you require. You don't want every technology to succeed.
And this is where I think it's just like everybody is trying their bit. You know, it is no one is a champion of any subject here. So this is the perfect way. Actually, I always say that let's try to avoid this technological colonization. Hmm. You know, it should not happen that all the technologies are with me and the rest of the world should suffer. Because if the heat is increasing in India, it is not that it won't hit Middle East or it won't go to Europe and vice versa. You know, the issue at hand is same for everywhere.
Yeah.
So idea is if we can popularize the good work that we are doing, as Dr. Vibha rightly said, and try to also learn from the failures or success from the other counterparts in Europe.
Yeah.
It is really helping the overall industry.
Right. That brings me to a few things that, from your perspective, you've not given me the over-optimism aspects of it, but I'm going to, because you've given us plenty more to think about, take back and think about. A few things that have to happen outside of the plant, the Jindal Steels, of the universe construct, that we need to get right if low-carbon steel has to scale in India and scale at levels that we haven't seen before. What are those things external to the plant that need to happen right?
See, that is what exactly I told you, that RMD, we require more. When we talk of low carbon steel, everyone wants it. If you ask even a person on the street what will be your preference, they'll say low carbon. If you ask the large manufacturer shipping company, they'll also say, I want low carbon steel. The gap is the cost differential. So if it becomes 4-5 times, there is a question mark. So what kind of R&D is required? R&D is required at different stages. First is where the carbon is emitted. What are the carbon pathways? And LCA analysis becomes extremely crucial because we have to put more money in research. What's actually going to cause? And it's not financial audit. We are talking of decarbonization efforts, the environment audit that needs to be carried.
So R&D is one. You've given us one factor external to the plant ecosystem.
Pilots,
that's still inside of the organization. Anything else? Policy?
Policy is, so decarbonization, see, if we look at policies which Government of India has, they are investing a lot of money in hydrogen mission. And really speaking, the pilots of that, they also want that they want industrial partner. Mm-hmm. So that is one way of bringing R&D in collaboration with the industry. Also incubation centers, there's a lot of scope for the startups because they are also entering into this space. Mm. So those are also encouraged today. So that is all the policy make, which is influencing the startup culture in this country. They are getting funding for doing that. Academia, industry interaction to set up pilots is also happening. So we are today in an environment where everything is moving in the right direction. But we are so big. Is that adequate? Is that kind of funding adequate, or we need to do much more?
Yeah.
And I'll say we need to do much more if we want to succeed like countries like China and others, because all said and done, the kitty is too small in our country.
On this, I just want to add that, you know, the funding part is definitely important. Apart from this, I think there has to be a willingness to pay premium by the customer. You know, that is also important. Mm. I got funding, I have produced a low carbon emission green steel, but there is no customer, you know, who is willing to pay the premium. Otherwise, you know, without a premium, you know, at cost, it is, so you can maybe produce few thousands of tons of steel, but when you talk about the scalable solution, you know, it won't move the needle.
And I'll just give you one idea, like when you're talking of buildings, and especially with a lot of steel is used in that infrastructure, suppose, or rather the policy change which government should can do it. I won't say that they should do it because I don't know the intricacies. So if you give to the builder that you can increase your floor area by 10%, that's enough. They'll recover the cost from this, what you're paying as premium for the steel. Mm-hmm. So it becomes win-win. So you don't lose anything and you are compensated for your effort.
While still on the outside, you had mentioned it in the context of, I think, our loop, circularity and hydrogen and all of that, skilling, right? The job creation element. But here's where there is a point of view, and we should address it, shouldn't be the elephant in the room, which is to say that climate ambition can be on a collision course with the nation's growth and jobs aspiration, right? It's a tricky one. What would you say India should do, or how should it think about competitiveness while still continuing to pursue its low carbon pathways? It appears that the twain cannot meet, but I'm sure you know where they meet.
Well, I'll say they meet. It's a myth that green is expensive. Hmm. It's not so. There can be a payback period. And that is what one is saying, because CapEx becomes little expensive if you're talking of climate smart infrastructure development. But your payback period is 2-3 years, and thereafter it is free. So therefore, as a nation, one is not asking for subsidies. One is asking for soft loans kind of a thing.
You know, I'm going to come to you, Prateek. You did explain to us, because at one level you have what's happening inside of the plant, and Vibha has just walked us through some of the policy changes, etc. And all of these get hardwired into how Jindal Steel possibly makes its decisions, right? How the plant, all of this is information and data that informs your choices. You told us about RISE, which is built out like an operating system, and clearly, the organization is not treating sustainability as merely reporting. Give us two or three reasons, core reasons, why you have chosen RISE as an OS or built it out as an OS.
So in one line, if I have to explain what RISE is, and you did allude to it at the beginning, it is an intent that we are translating into a system, and that system can actually tell us how progress is happening within the organization, which you can see,
right,
which you can audit, and which you can trust. And how are we doing this? We hardwire ownership. Because this RISE, what I mentioned about on all the topics, how do we decide that what, you know, what are the topics that we will, you know, focus on? And the input is very simple. We look at stakeholder engagement. We look at our enterprise risk management. We look at how we are focusing on decisions. And then we are hardwiring it with ownership. And then beyond or below the board, we run a very simple cascade that we have an ESG steering committee. Mm-hmm. And, at the corporate level, we have cross-functional ESG task forces and then plant-level ESG squads. Mm. So we ensure that the whole process is moving from the boardroom to the control room without any dilution.
Right.
And after that, we are also looking at the fact that it is integrating in our decision-making process. Mm. ESG topics show up at the CapEx gate.
Right.
ESG topic is showing up when we are doing operational reviews. Mm-hmm. And most importantly, we are measuring it and we are making sure that there is evidence. What you can't really, in sustainability, there is one rule. What you can't evidence it, you can't really scale it.
Now, all of this sounds like you're collecting a lot of data.
Yes.
And on one of our episodes, Intelligent by Design, one of our tech leaders who was our speakers mentioned, spoke about how there's a lot of data within a plant, right? If only that was accessible to build intelligence into the future. I'm guessing there's a load of sustainability data out there, and I'm quite certain also that it is being used to make some decisions at Jindal Steel. Tell us all about this decision-making process. What are the areas where this data comes in handy? Or is it just being put away in some filed room,
Not at all. You're right. Many a times, Naveen will, really add on to this fact, because when we were getting into the whole process of responding to the questionnaires, which Dow Jones Sustainability Index or CDP or EcoVadis, they are asking, we are dealing with hundreds of key performance indicators, which are so minute, and that requires a lot of data management. And we also want to, as I said, work on the single version of truth so that we always talk about one narrative, one governance structure, and hence having the IT-enabled ESG data system,
right.
which that is what we are building. One tech-enabled data spine is what we are building, and we are working with all our functions. Because at the plant, they are the ones who are measuring data at the source. We are creating a data lake through which, and we're also wanting to come away from Excel sheets. So with IT and with our external partners, we want to create bridges directly from the source so that we move away from Excel. So that the audits are calmer, it is quicker. And, that is where we are using our tool. And
exactly.
Is there anything that you want to
add? No, just to add, Pratik, what you just said, I think this was the entire process that we built. But on the source side, putting up the emission monitoring system, putting up the, the boards which can really take the AQI, number. AQI at the source, what is PM2.5, what is PM... So it is about basically integrating from backward integration to the overall data. And they actually, you said it right. In the entire process, 90% or 80% of the time that it took us, it was about mining or fishing out the right data and identifying the stakeholders. But now I think the idea is to how we can sort of automate this entire thing, digitalize it so that, all the input that is going, it should not be an Excel-based input. It should be a system-based input.
Yeah.
And also warming yourself to ensure that this credibility, can be delivered on a consistent basis. That is super important.
Right.
Because I'm good for this year, my score is good, but next year, you know, I'm delivering absolutely 50% of that. That is not that is where, you know, driving your credibility. So it is about consistency also. That is super important to maintain it where we are.
Yeah. And also one thing, because we all develop, because especially when we are also dependent on the outside research results.
Yeah.
So the roadmap which we develop, we may not be walking exactly on the same path. So therefore, I may change my path, but that should be known to everyone.
Yeah.
Why we are changing it and what good it's going to do. Consistency is important, but as I said, failures are equally important. They need to be reported. And what action we have taken because of those failures.
Yeah.
And I think, sorry.
Yeah, well, no, go ahead.
And I think sustainability is not a one department job.
Absolutely.
We have to internalize it. It is not something to do, but it is to be. Now, in order to be sustainable, every single department has to be in symphony. We are ensuring that from the top to the foot soldier who is toiling hard at the plant, at the shop floor. And that is why Naveen and I, we ensured that at least once in a month, if not twice, and many a times for 3 weeks, we have gone to the plant,
right,
talking to the HODs, talking to the people at the line management, understanding their real-time issues, because we do not want this topic to be esoteric. There has to be a sustainability bent of mind in everybody who comes. And hence, we would love to work with organizations like, any other think like Terry, where we can build curriculums that we have a sustainability 101.
Right.
Whoever comes into the organization, they are aware that these are, because unlike any other organization, Sheetal, in Jindal Steel, sustainability is one of the values. It is in our blood, because sustainability for a hard-to-abate sector, it is core operations engineered. Mm. And hence, having a sustainability 101 curriculum, building capacity amongst line management so that they know how to internalize sustainability. For example, procurement team should know what are the changes in the vendor contracts they need to infuse so that they can talk. And in the end, competency building, the top leadership.
Right.
Yesterday's unit heads are today's ambassadors for sustainability in our organization.
Right.
That holistic approach is what we are also trying to do.
In fact, you have said what I wanted to say.
Oh, sorry.
Why I'm saying is that, first of all, we are also toying with the idea of having ESG Academy. But what is important for us or for anyone is that we require capacity building at various stages.
Right.
I want CEO to know what kind of technologies exist, but I don't want him to know what the technology is.
Mm.
Then the next level comes. So therefore, even the courses, the capacity building is to be done at different levels differently.
Absolutely.
The other important point is, all said and done, we all become frogs in the well. We started looking at one particular discipline like this. So it is very important, therefore, that all the divisional heads, they come together, they discuss what to do, and there are interconnections in every technology.
Right.
So that is what is required today. Today, science is interdisciplinary. I cannot be a chemical engineer alone. I need to know everything else around me as well.
You're right.
And that is where the skilling part of it and the R&D part of it and the, industry academia, that also play an important role that we discussed, you know. So I think we have already started this by conducting the workshop. The HODs, they exactly know, you know, if they have to, they should know what is levelized cost of hydrogen. They should know how to calculate that. They should know what is a break-even point at which their, hydrogen has to come. So that, how their operation becomes sustainable. Right. How they can, and sustainable has to eventually at the end of the day, it has to be also competitive as well. It has also be economic sense in the overall operation.
Yeah.
Because I am sustainable, I am in investing extra money, extra capex, and that is increasing my cost of production. But there is no customer who is willing to take.
Mm.
So it means that everything has to go hand in hand, and that's why the skilling part is very, very important. The interfacing between the corporate office, between the customers, suppliers, and with the backend team at the site, that is super important. And also the academia industry relationship, that has to be very, very strong, according to me. I think that is where we are driving it, try to improve it, because that is where, because they come, the academia, thought leadership, they are coming from a neutral kind of mindset.
Yes.
They can really educate us. They can really show us the path. Mm. We maybe sometimes get over ambitious, overexcited, but they are the one who really show you the different technologies so that they give you a 360 degree view.
Yeah.
And that is very, very important.
Yeah. Naveen, the point which you said, maybe I'm wrong, but I'll say that corporates will adopt sustainability because today it's a cutthroat competition. Profits of every industry are reducing. So therefore, the first step is whatever we suggest, it should lead to financial sustainability as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Industry is willing. They want to adopt green technologies. Of course, a bit of mindset that green is expensive, which is not true. They have to look at it with open mind. But also for academia, it is very important that they give solutions which you can actually adopt.
Yes.
And it leads to financial and environmental sustainability both.
Right. Absolutely. I echo that sentiment, and hence collaboration is so important.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So we have to work in an ecosystem, but not in an ecosystem.
Hmm.
And hence capacity building, collaboration, getting, continuity, consistency. Hmm. These are the, basic C's that we have to make sure to see that we are actually walking the talk.
Yeah.
And also this clusters and valleys approach. So I think we have to also, along with this C, one more C has to also there, from where, how we have to move from competition to co-petition. Yes. How we can in an ecosystem, how we can work together. Because if the CO2 is coming from Tata Steel, which is 60 kilometers, 70 kilometers away from my plant, why can't we work together and try to make an ecosystem where the captured CO2 from both the units or plants can be taken into pipeline and given it to the off-takers? So that is where I think that has to come into picture. So it is not anybody's sharpness or their smartness. It is about the entire ecosystem has to work in
absolutely.
Tandem.
Yeah, absolutely. And also for research, repeatedly I say we require crowdfunding.
Yeah. Yes. So
otherwise, and why 10 different steel makers should be investing in same kind of research.
Correct.
It will become cheaper, much cheaper. And other bright minds, otherwise there is always competition, that there is also headhunting going on. So you don't want that to happen. You want everyone to sit down together, put their brains and look for a solution.
Yeah. Brilliant so far, but I'm not done yet, because here's where I didn't realize that you can do a rapid fire round for a topic like sustainability, but we're going to give it a shot. It's got to be rapid.
Yeah.
Because there are questions, and some of you may want to take multiple questions, and that's perfectly fine. Let's start with Vibha. One assumption about low carbon steel that you don't agree with at all, Vibha?
Well, I'll say CBAM. Mm. Because the developed part of the world, they shouldn't tax economies which are still grappling with finding solutions.
Okay.
Because they are actually stopping research at their end, and they want themselves to become richer and richer.
Mm. All right. Okay.
First one, if you really ask, then renewable energy is the one.
Okay.
Yeah.
You want?
One thing that I can add is availability of scrap. How do you ensure that you have enough scrap? Because that is another way of making so-called low-emission steel. And that is something that we have to really work upon. And I have learned it from the steel experts in our organization, that countries have started fencing around the export of scrap, because it's going to be, real wealth going forward.
Vibha, one metric that you think industry should use to measure progress in their low carbon transition journey?
Well, I'll say it should be the total carbon footprint. It's scope 2, scope 3 emissions as well. And it's something like Mission Life, where we are trying to say that every citizen has to see their own carbon footprint. For any industry, it is every step of their operation. So whether we are talking of energy efficiency, we are talking what kind of energy they are using, how they are disposing waste. One thing which we usually ignore is water. So what kind of natural resource are we using? Are we really recycling it? And that is where even the government policies become very important, because they should also make a mandate. There should be a carrot and stick policy that you have to recycle this much of natural resource. We won't give you more than, say, 20% of water. Rest 80% you have to recycle.
Yes. Okay. So one constraint that is external to the plant that keeps you, like, gives you sleepless nights that you worry about all the time?
I think the expectation from the customers and the overall, basically, how you survive in the ecosystem. So that is where I think, because we are here because of our customer. So if we are enabler to them,
right,
helping them to reduce their carbon intensity, then I think we are there. So I think that is where, you know, our focus is right now.
And this last one for all of you, if you were to complete the sentence, in the Indian context, low carbon transition means... We'll start with you, Navi.
Means opportunity.
Okay. All right. That's a great one word.
Collaboration.
Okay.
I'll go to something which is much talked about. Sabka Saath, Sabka Vikas.
Nice one. And that's a great way to wrap up this conversation. I am quite certain that the notebooks that you brought to this podcast to fill in with actionable insights, like we promised, is full, is absolutely full. And you're running to the stationery store to get another one. But that's what a real conversation on sustainability, decarbonization really looks like. And you've learned that low carbon steel is not really something of a distant target. It's really what's happening tomorrow morning inside of a plant, right? And you've also seen the shape or the form that low carbon transition takes inside of a plant. It could mean, you know, fewer stops, cleaner energy feeding the system, tighter reuse loops, and most certainly data that stands up to scrutiny of any kind. And once you've actually layered that with the science and policy realism, then you are pretty much looking at a low carbon pathway that delivers on both fronts. It cuts carbon and it also helps you build at scale. This has been fascinating, and I must thank all of you for joining us in this conversation.
Pleasure.
And for all the
enjoy so much. Thanks.
Thank you.
Enjoyed the discussions.
For our viewers, this is turning out to be quite the season too, which is a study in intent and in planning across episodes, whether it's capability building and talent pipelining or technology, or as we saw today, decarbonization and sustainability. It has been invigorating. But don't go anywhere, because we will be back soon again with more episodes on season 2 of the Steel of India podcast. Thank you for watching.